This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Uhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And for them to numb themselves from these economic difficulties, they're using drugs.
That's Plot Mahako, director of the Jiblika Dance Trust, which uses hip-hop to keep young people off the streets in Zimbabwe. Details coming up also. Mali's president and prime minister have been detained by the military. And life in Goma in eastern DRC gradually is getting normal after the deadly volcanic eruption last Saturday. These stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Mali's transitional president Bahan Dao and Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouen remain detained after being taken by force to the military headquarters late yesterday. Interim Vice President Colonel Assim Goita said today that he ousted them because they failed to consult him about the nomination of a new government, violating the transitional charter. Goita, who led the coup last August that overthrew then-President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, said in a statement that elections next year to restore an elected government would go ahead as planned. For more, International Edition's Chinedu Ofor spoke with VOA's Bambara Service Chief Bagasi Kura on the condition of the deposed leaders.
What we have been hearing so far is that they are not being mistreated. It's just that they are not free to move around. They are being detained in the military base in Kati, the largest military base in the country. It's the same where former President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita was taken to last year in August when there was a coup against him.
What is the junta calling this action? Is it a coup or is it a change of guard or something else?
Yes, that's the question we have been asking since yesterday, since they were arrested, because nothing was said. But an hour ago, we had seen military officials on the TV talking in behalf of the Vice President, Colonel Assimi Goita, and he said that the country was not going in the right direction and that this president were incapable of doing the thing the way they should. So from now on, they are being reprieved from their prerogative, which means that they are no longer president and vice president. And from that, I think most people deduct that this is a coup that's being announced. And what we know is that overnight, people from the church, from the High Council of Islam of Mali, opposition members, civil society representatives, they have all went to Kati, not together, but in turn to discuss with the military. We don't know what was being discussed, but it's after all these meetings that this morning they announced that the president and the vice president were suspended.
Does the assurances given by the military that elections would hold as scheduled, does that assuage the fears of the people, and how are people reacting to this latest development?
That's a very good question, because in the communique that I'm talking about, they said the election will be held during 2022. So they are saying that when the date was already set for March 2022. Why are they being vague now, saying that it will be sometime in 2022? And people start wondering, maybe they want to postpone the election date and people are worried. We don't know how internally people will react, but the international community already have strongly condemned it and say it will not accept nothing less than having vice president and his prime minister be in charge of the transition.
That was VOA's Bambara Service Chief Bagasi Kura speaking with International Edition's Chinedu Ofor. As life in Goma gradually gets back to normal life, reminders of Saturday's deadly volcanic eruption and the possibility of another are shaking the ground and nerves. More than 30 people died as lava swept into a suburb of the city of 2 million in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. VOA's Kate Pondawson speaks with journalist Jafar Al-Katani in Goma, which reports the region is being hit by a rapid series of earthquakes.
Today, people are very, very scared because of earthquake. Yesterday and the day before yesterday, it was around one earthquake in 20 minutes. But we can say, let's say today is one earthquake every 5 minutes. And now we already got some collapsed houses, collapsed buildings, and some people was injured and one dead.
So,
even now, just when you are asking, are you still there? There is an earthquake.
That's an earthquake storm. Oh, my goodness. Has the government given any information about safety, about what people should be doing? Are people evacuating their homes now because of the earthquakes?
Yeah, the government said people who are building have to leave them or to stay down because of earthquake. And for sure, government doesn't have a lot of data on this eruption, as the volcanologist observatory was not working for a long time because of money. So they don't have any information to give to people. They just advise people to do not stay in houses in case of a big earthquake.
Is any aid reaching the survivors of this disaster, of the volcano eruption and the earthquakes?
Not yet, but a team of some ministers from the government from Kinshasa reached Goma yesterday in the evening, and they are in meeting today. We think that after their meeting, they will communicate, they will make a plan for survivors. But from the day of eruption up today, there is no plan, anything for survivors.
That was journalist Jafar Al-Katanti in Goma speaking with VOA's Kate Pondawson. International peace-building and pro-democracy organizations are increasingly concerned by what they see as breakdown in trust between governments and their people across Africa. The United Nations Development Program, or UNDP, for example, says administrations without legitimate authority to rule are causing cycles of conflict and instability. Darren Taylor reports.
What does it say when an African leader wins an election with 98.4% of the vote? That's the question posed by Dr. Roselyn Akombe, the UNDP's Governance and Peacebuilding Coordinator in Africa.
Where you have no legitimacy, where people do not feel that their will was reflected, where electoral results are contested, it becomes difficult for that leadership and power to really be able to exercise legitimacy, because that legitimacy was never given by the people because of how the process was done, whether it was legal or not.
The global affairs expert and former undersecretary at UN headquarters in New York says many African states tend to think that well-organized polls guarantee legitimate results, but that's not the case.
I always remember the example of South Africa in 1994. Election practitioners will tell you that it was one of the least well technically prepared elections. But the legitimacy was not questioned. The legitimacy of Mandela's victory was not questioned.
Akombe knows a thing or two about disputed polls. The Kenyan once led her home country's electoral commission. She resigned after the 2017 presidential elections, which Human Rights Watch says left about 1,300 people dead and 600,000 displaced. Akombe says she's worried that more African leaders seem bent on extending presidential term limits.
That 16 countries that have changed their constitutions to be able to extend term limits. And out of those 16, 13 have just happened in the last 6 years.
That, she says, is a recipe for violence and evidence of a return to the old African trend of personalization of power.
What you're seeing more and more is personal rule, the return of populist leaders, some in countries that are too close to my own. And we've seen the consequences of that when you have the return of personality cults that make it really difficult to do simple things.
In her home region, Yoweri Museveni's been president of Uganda since 1986. In January, he was elected for a sixth term, despite allegations of electoral fraud and violent suppression of the opposition. Akombe says some African administrations are using COVID-19 as an excuse for what she calls their obvious failings. She describes the pandemic as an X-ray of African leadership.
Yes, it has brought its own complexities, but actually what it has done, it has brought to the open the fact that we've not been investing in health sectors, the fact that we've not developed social safety nets, we've not been investing in diversified economies. That's why economies that rely on tourism are going to have it very difficult.
She says as long as the legitimacy of many governments is being questioned and fought about, the development needed in the countries concerned won't happen, especially in the middle of the pandemic.
If as a leader, you're not trusted by the people, even if you put together COVID-19 measures to stop the COVID spread, people are not going to believe you, because they will not understand. You have not built trust to be able to be seen that what you're telling them serves their interest. They will always be saying that there's something else. You're doing this for some other political reason.
Akombe's message to illegitimate leaders is, don't blame the pandemic for breaking your social contract with your people. Earn your nation's trust or go. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Chad's former ambassador to the United States, Mahmoud Adam Bashir, and his ex-deputy Yusuf Hamid Takani have been indicted by the U.S. Justice Department for allegedly soliciting a bribe. The French news agency AFP, quoting the Justice Department, says that between August 2009 and July 2014, while serving at Chad's embassy in Washington, the two officials accepted a $2 million bribe from a Canadian startup energy company in exchange for help obtaining oil rights in Chad. Also indicted is Niam Tiab, a Canadian citizen who served as director of the company from 2009 to 2011. Bashir, Takan, and Niam are charged with money laundering, which carries a maximum sentence of 20 years. They remain at large. Experts on drug abuse worry that COVID-19 has spawned a spike in use among young Zimbabweans. Reporter Kuzaza Nwashi has the details.
Tungamira Izimondi is the director of the group Youth Against Drug Dependency and Alcoholism.
There hasn't been much research on the prevalence of drug abuse in Zimbabwe, but judging from media and police reports, comments from government officials, and complaints from affected communities, it is safe to conclude that there has been an increase in drug abuse exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Plot Marco is the director of Jebiliga Dance Trust, a non-profit organization which uses hip-hop culture to keep young people off the streets. He finds the drug abuse situation worrying.
The situation is quite scary to talk of. A lot of young people are now exposed to the use and abuse of these illicit drugs. I think the situation has been further compounded by the hardships in the country, the worsening economic situation, and then now because of COVID, a lot of young people that were primarily hustling before are not having any other source of income. And for them to numb themselves from these economic difficulties, they're using drugs.
Zimonte says a variety of drugs are in demand.
The new drug of choice currently being abused is crystal meth, popularly known as Mutoriro or Guka Makafela. In the streets, other drugs being abused include alcohol, cannabis, and non-medicinal use of controlled medicines such as codeine, containing cough medicines, and benzodiazepines. They have also been drug busts of cocaine at the airport.
And Plot Mako says there is no deliberate, effective plan to get young people off drugs.
What makes even the situation more difficult is that there are no rehabilitation centers that are easily accessible to young people. The few that are available are actually out of reach for many in terms of cost. And the government's quick remedy to substance abuse always tends to take the young people into incarceration, so they get arrested.
He adds that some struggling with drug abuse are treated at government psychiatric hospitals for mental illness. All the above avenues, incarceration or psychiatric hospitals, often result in the release of young people who quickly relapse. The government started a 5-year national drug master plan last year. It's unclear if it's having an impact. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunamashi from Harare.
Africa Day symbolizes unity, but South Africa, a nation with over 10 official languages and many tribes, is also celebrating its diversity. While the Zulu and Xhosa tribes, historically referred to as nations, are the most dominant in South Africa, the Ndebele nation has recently been in the forefront, fighting for recognition and preservation of its culture. Tuso Kumalo traveled to Kiwendibeli in Mpumalanga province to find out how these nations has managed to retain its culture for centuries through use of colors and traditional attire.
The Ndebele people are known as people of color. What others call color blocking, wearing clothes with different colors at the same time, the Ndebele people have done for centuries and they're proud of it. Granny Sophie Mahlangu is one of the oldest cultural custodians of the Ndebele nation. The 64-year-old spends much of her time in a painting and beading workshop. She spends the day making cultural drawings of objects which she says are spiritual to her. They speak to her, and she is able to communicate as she would with a human being. Through beads and paint, she colors everything she touches with her hands, linen, furniture, clothing, and ornaments to give them a Ndebele feel. Tando Mahlangu is a Ndebele culture activist. He has launched a national campaign to ensure it dominates national platforms, including television stations. Recently, he was humiliated when the manager of a Johannesburg shopping mall tried to eject him for wearing Ndebele clothing that he said was too revealing. However, Mahlangu is adamant that his attire is the core value of his Africanness and no one can change that.
The reason why we're doing these paintings, it's all in Ndebele colors. It's promoting and protecting and preserving the language and culture of Ndebele. The way I'm dressed, it represents Ndebele language, it represents Ndebele culture.
His youthful partner, Ngobile Masuku, has also joined the fight.
We must not leave our culture because it's where we belong. Sometimes if you don't know your culture, you don't know where you're from. You don't know your roots, your dignity as well. So we should not let our culture die.
After their defeat by settlers in 1883, the Ndebele people decided to use painting and beaded clothing as a way of silent resistance and preservation of their culture. Ndebele culture expert and researcher Tulani Kacha says the fight for cultural preservation is a genuine one.
These patterns of creation, the colors, they do have a meaning because of they are the colors of nature. So it shows that Ndebele nation, they are from the creator and they have the special message to deliver the motto of unity in diversity.
Sophie Mahlangu says before she dies, she wants to ensure that the Ndebele people's distinctive ways of beading, painting and dressing find their way not only into many African countries, but across the seas into other continents. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Gambia's Truth Commission has been searching for bodies in forest parks and crocodiles ponds operated by exiled dictator Yahya Jammeh. Government opponents and people accused of coup attempts were allegedly killed secretly, with some becoming food for crocodiles. Reporter Panderambai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Accompanied by Jammeh's alleged former hitmen, known as the Junglers, the site took the commission to rural areas, including Scanilai, Jammeh's home village. The TRC lead counsel, Esa Fall, a former International Criminal Court prosecutor, describes what they saw.
At Scanilai, we visited at least two crocodile ponds. You would recall that witness testimony indicated that several people were killed, chopped up, and thrown into the crocodile ponds as charity for the crocodile. The commission has even had evidence of babies being thrown into the crocodile pond as charity for the crocodiles.
Fall says babies were killed for ritual purposes.
They indicated to us that there are hundreds of crocodiles here in this pond. As you could see, that mighty one, they tell us that there are even some that are much bigger than this one, and they number more than 400 for now. The plan of the commission was to drain these crocodile ponds for the purposes of a forensic investigation. But that decision was cancelled because of the advice we received from the wildlife authorities and the importance of ensuring that the environment and the wildlife are also protected.
Fall has warned the public to stay away from the areas which have been designated as crime scenes, with penalties for tampering with evidence. Security officers have been deployed there. The commission also visited several other sites, including one where two Gambian Americans were reportedly arrested during a visit, then killed and buried. Fall says their bodies were not found when officials sought to exhume them. Over 50 West African migrants were killed under Jammeh's rule after being mistaken for rebels bent on overthrowing him. They were dumped into a well, and one was thrown into the sea. The TRRC is on the verge of finishing its public hearings and is expected to submit its final report to the president in August. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.